is Decoding the Crime Verse.
911, what's your emergency?
Hello, welcome back to Decoding the Crime Verse. I am Danny and I'm joined with...
Glory!
That's correct, and today we are back with another female serial killer.
Uh-huh.
I thought we'd bring them back because there's not as many as men. Why?
Because not as many as accounted for.
That's why we only have 9 women prisons in South Africa and 240-something men. I'm just saying. Women aren't naturally criminal. I'm kidding.
They haven't accounted for all the women that abused men.
Maybe we just get away with it. Maybe we're just smarter. Maybe we just know how to hide our evidence and not get caught. I feel like that is the vibe.
You're not smarter. You're just very good at pushing stuff away. And
no, we're good at concealing
because they allow. There's many ways that women get out of the stuff, and one of them
they
is
just bat their
bribery
eyelids.
And seducing cops and things like that.
You know what? It's fine. Okay, he's not lying. I feel like he's not lying.
Yeah.
What a wonderful world we live in to be a woman. But we are dealing with Beverly Eltitz, who was known as the Angel of Death, which was one of Britain's most notorious female serial killers. So she had quite a weird childhood, okay? And she showed very worrying tendencies while growing up as a child of 1 of 4, including wearing bandages and casts over wounds that she would then use to draw attention to herself without actually allowing for the injuries to be examined. So like wearing a cast without actually going for an x-ray.
Yeah.
Okay, she became overweight as an adolescent and became increasingly attention-seeking, often showing aggression towards others. She spent considerable time in hospitals seeking medical attention for a string of physical ailments which accumulated in the removal of her appendix, which was perfectly healthy. And it was slow to heal because she kept interfering with the surgical scars.
Hmm.
That's messed up.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. She was also known for self-harm and had to resort to doctor hopping as medical practitioners became familiar with her attention-seeking behaviors. This really appeared to be Munchausen syndrome. If you've been listening to our show, you would have known when we did the Gypsy Rose case that mom had Munchausen syndrome. And that's basically when you try to act sick or like you like your child is sick, so now people give you all the attention.
Yeah.
Or like you want the attention because your arm is broken and now you've got your appendix out and now you're having a tooth removed. All that jazz. She went on to train as a nurse and was suspected of odd behavior such as smearing poo on the walls of the nursing home where she trained as this woman's crazy.
Not very mature, did she?
No. Okay. Yeah. She picked at her surgery scars. I don't think she's normal at all. Okay, she would also accuse her boyfriend of rape and claimed a false pregnancy. So she's clearly a wackadoo from day one.
Yeah.
Okay, and despite her history of poor attendance and successive failure of her nursing examinations, she took up a temporary 6-month contract at the understaffed Grantham and Kesteven Hospital in Lincolnshire in 1991, where she began work in the children's ward. The wrong ward to put this crazy woman in.
Definitely.
I'm just saying. Okay, and there were only 2 nurses during the daytime and 1 during the night shifts. And this explained why her violent behavior went on undetected for so long. So, on February 21st, 1991, her first victim, who was 7 months old, okay, not even a year, poor little baby, okay, he spent more time in the womb than outside.
Wow.
Okay, he's small, okay. His name was Liam Taylor and was admitted with a chest infection. And she went out of her way to reassure the parents, you know what, he's in capable hands, go home, get some rest. When they came back, she told them he had suffered a respiratory emergency, but he had recovered, and she volunteered an extra night duty so she could watch over the boy, and the parents then chose to spend the night. Liam then had another crisis just before midnight, But he came through satisfactory, so they left the boy alone with the nurse. However, his condition worsened dramatically. He became deathly pale before red blotches appeared on his face, and he was and the nurse then summoned the emergency resuscitation team. Okay. Her colleagues were confused by the absence of alarm monitors at the time, which had failed to sound when he stopped breathing. Liam suffered cardiac arrest, and despite the best efforts of the attending team, he suffered severe brain damage and remained alive only with the help of life support machines. On medical advice, his parents made the agonizing decision to remove their baby from life support, and the cause of death was recorded as heart failure. And Miss Allerton was never questioned for her role in Liam's death.
Yeah.
2 weeks later, she took her next victim, who was Timothy Hardwick, who was 11-year-old, who had cerebral palsy and had been admitted because of an epileptic fit on March 5th, 1991. Allerton took over his care, and again, following a period where she was alone with the boy, she summoned the emergency resuscitation team, who found him without a pulse and turning blue. Despite their best efforts, which included a pediatric specialist, were unable to revive him, and the autopsy later failed to provide a cause of death, but they officially blamed it on the epilepsy. Her third victim was a 1-year-old named Kaylee Desmond, who was admitted March 3rd, 1991 with a chest infection. She seemed to be recovering well, but 5 days later, with Allerton in attendance, Kaylee went into cardiac arrest in the same bed where Liam Taylor had died 2 weeks earlier. The resuscitation team were unable to revive her, and she was transferred to another hospital in Nottingham, where the physicians discovered a puncture hole under her armpit during the examination. They also discovered an air bubble near the puncture mark, which they attributed to an accidental injection, but no investigation was initiated. We then had 5-month-year-old Paul Crampton, and he was placed in the ward on March 20th, 1991 as the result of a non-serious bronchial infection. Just prior to his discharge, Allerton, who was again attending the patient, summoned help as Paul appeared to be suffering from insulin shock, going into a near coma on 3 separate occasions. Each time the doctors revived him but were unable to explain this fluctuation in insulin levels. When he was taken by ambulance to another hospital in Nottingham, Allerton rode with him. He again was found to have too much insulin, and Paul was extremely fortunate to have survived Allerton's means of killing him. The next day, so she couldn't even wait. She's like, no, that one failed. Next day, there was 5-year-old Bradley Gibson, and he had pneumonia, and he went into unexpected cardiac arrest, but was saved by the resuscitation team. Subsequent blood tests showed that his insulin was high and made no sense to the attending physicians. Attendance by Allerton resulted in another heart attack later that night, and he was transported to Nottingham, where he recovered. Despite this alarming increase of the incidence of unexplained health events, all in the presence of Allerton, no suspicions were aroused, and she continued her spree of violence. You see, this is what I don't understand. This is why I really feel like there should be more than one person. Because this woman fully was like, suddenly all these kids are having cardiac arrest. Do you not see that there's a problem here?
Yeah, look, in every form of show or podcast that we've ever recorded, there always seem to be these sort of cases, especially around like people that are of like government work. Like now, you have obviously this lady who's a nurse, and you have like often like cops like letting stuff slip. So it's always, I don't know, it's like a trend, and for some reason people always, I don't know if they're turning a blind eye to things.
Well, I don't know if she was able to get away with it because it is a hospital and things happen in a hospital. You kind of have no control. But like, surely a pattern should have emerged.
But yeah, I guess it's just like how they say, well, I don't know how many people use this saying, but the only person that can legally get away with killing someone is a doctor.
There's been multiple people.
Yeah.
Multiple doctors. Well, then on March 22nd, and I mean, these all took place in 1 month. I mean, and that's a lot. March 22nd, 1991, there was two-year-old Yikhan Chan who turned blue and appeared in considerable distress when Allerton raised the alarm, but he responded well to oxygen. Another attack resulted in his transferal to a larger hospital in Nottingham, where he recovered. You see, it's also suspicious that every time they move hospitals, they suddenly recover and they are fine.
Yeah.
And his symptoms were attributed to a fractured skull as a result of a fall. Allerton next turned her attention to twins, Katie and Becky Phillips, who were just 2 months old, who were being kept for observation as a result of a premature birth. Okay. The one twin had gastroenteritis. I'm not a doctor, so excuse that. It brought Becky into the ward on April 1st, 1999, where Allerton took over her care. 2 days later, Allerton raised the alarm, claiming that Becky appeared hypoglycemic and cold to the touch, but no ailment was found. Baby Becky was sent home with her mother. During the night, she went into convulsions and cried out in apparent pain, but when summoned, a doctor suggested she had colic. The parents kept her in their bed for observation, and she died during the night. Despite, imagine waking up and your child is dead next to you. I actually don't know what I would do. Yeah. I don't know what I would do. I'd sell the house.
What?
No, I would. I know someone who did that. So this parent, I don't know if they were out the night or whatever, and they came home and their child had committed suicide in the kitchen. But the child had taken her own blood and in all over the kitchen walls wrote, "I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you." The parents never set foot in the house again. Can you imagine that coming home to your child? Yeah, I would also sell the house. I'm just saying. Well, if I was this parent with the dead child in the bed, I'd sell the bed. Wouldn't sleep there again. I'm just saying.
So you're going to sell the bed to someone else to sleep on it?
That's not my business. Wow. That's their business. I'll burn the bed. It's fine.
Just cheating.
And despite the autopsy, they could not find out why this little girl had died. Becky's surviving twin, Katie, was admitted into the hospital, again under Allerton's care. It wasn't long before she was again summoning a resuscitation team to revive baby Katie, who had stopped breathing. Efforts to revive Katie were successful, but 2 days later she suffered a similar attack which resulted in the collapse of her lungs. Following another revival effort, she was transferred to Nottingham, where they found that 5 of her ribs were broken. What? In addition to have suffered serious brain damage as a result of oxygen deprivation. You see, so even if, like, she didn't kill this child now has serious consequences for the rest of their lives because they had brain damage and things like that. In a supreme twist of irony, please listen to this, Kate's mother was so grateful for Allerton saving Kate that she made Allerton Kate's godmother. The serial killer who killed your one twin is now your other twin's godmother.
That's interesting.
Make it make sense. Okay? And she accepted willingly. Obviously, she would accept.
Yeah.
Okay. There were 4 more victims that followed, but the high incidence of unexplained attacks in otherwise healthy patients and Allerton's attendance during these attacks finally caused suspicion to be raised at the hospital. Allerton's violent spree was brought to an end with the death of 15-month-old Claire Peck on April 22, 1991, who was asthmatic and required a breathing tube. While in Allerton's care for only a few minutes, the infant suffered a heart attack. Damn. The resuscitation team revived her successfully, but when again alone with Allerton's present, baby Claire suffered a second attack from which she could not be revived. Although an autopsy indicated that Claire had died from natural causes, an inquiry was initiated by a consultant at the hospital, Dr. Nelson Porter, who was alarmed by the high number of cardiac arrests that had happened over the previous 2 months. You see, this is where she was a chump. If she had did this sparsely, if she had done one every 2 months, it would have been normal.
Yeah, but it's not like you're just expecting a series of cardiac...
Yeah, but you see, this is why she got caught, because she did it all quickly. Of course it's going to raise suspicion. I'm just saying, don't listen to me if you're a criminal, okay? I'm not advising you. I'm just saying that's why she got caught. Okay, they blamed an airborne virus at first, but there was nothing found. And a test revealed a high level of potassium in baby Claire's body, which resulted in the police being summoned 18 days later. When they exhumed her body, there was traces of lidocaine in her system, which was a drug used during cardiac arrest but should never be given to children or a baby. The police superintendent assigned to the investigation, Stuart Clifton, suspected foul play, and he examined the other suspicious cases that had occurred in the previous 2 months, finding high doses of insulin in most. Further evidence revealed that Allerton had reported the key missing to the insulin refrigerator. All records were checked, parents of the victims were interviewed, and security camera was installed. Suspicions were raised when record checks revealed missing daily nursing logs, which corresponded to the time period when Paul Crampton had been in the ward. When 25 separate suspicious episodes with 13 victims were identified, four of whom were dead, the only common factor was Beverly Allerton in every episode. And so by July 26, 1991, the police felt they had sufficient evidence to charge Allerton with murder, but it wasn't until November when she was formally charged. She was very calm and restrained during investigation, denying any part in the attacks, insisting she had merely been caring for her victims. A search of her home revealed parts of the missing nursing logs. Further extensive background checks by the police indicated a pattern of behavior that pointed to a very serious personality disorder, and Allerton exhibited symptoms of both Munchausen syndrome and Munchausen syndrome by proxy. Oh, I remember now. So Munchausen syndrome is when you want it for yourself, so you'll break your own arm to get sympathy. But Munchausen syndrome by proxy is when you'll break your child's arm to get the attention for caring for her. Yeah. That's so crazy. I don't understand why you would want to do that.
Yeah.
With Munchausen syndrome, physical or physiological symptoms are either self-induced or feigned in oneself to gain attention, while Munchausen by proxy involves inflicting injury on others to gain attentions on oneself. It is fairly unusual for an individual to have both conditions. So this child was a wackadoo, like we said. Allerton's behavior in adolescence appeared to be typical of Munchausen syndrome, and when her behavior failed to get the desired reactions from others, she began to harm her patients in order to satisfy her desire to be noticed. Despite visits and assessments by a number of healthcare professionals while in prison, Allerton refused to confess to what she had done. After a series of hearings, Allerton was charged with 4 counts of murder, 11 counts of attempted murder, and 11 counts of causing grievous bodily harm. As she awaited her trial, she rapidly lost weight and developed anorexia, which was a further indication of psychological problems. After numerous delays due to her illness, she went on trial at Nottingham Crown Court on February 15, 1993, where prosecutors demonstrated to the jury how she had been present at each suspicious episode and the lack of episodes when she was taken off the ward. Evidence about high readings of insulin and potassium in each of her victims, as well as drug injection and puncture marks, were also linked to Allerton. She was further accused of cutting off her victims' oxygen, either by smothering or tampering with the machines. Her unusual behavior in childhood was brought to light, and the pediatric expert Professor Roy Meadow explained Munchausen syndrome and Munchausen's by proxy syndrome to the jury, pointing out how Allerton demonstrated symptoms of both, as well as introducing evidence of her typical post-arrest behavior and high incidence of illness, which had delayed the start of the trial. It was the Professor Meadow's opinion that Allerton would never be cured, making her a clear danger to anyone who she might come into contact with. After the trial that lasted nearly 2 months, Allerton was convicted on May 23, 1993 and given 13 life sentences. She is never, never getting out of prison for murder and attempted murder. It was the harshest sentence ever delivered to a female. According to Mr. Justice Lathman, it was in like proportion for horrific suffering of her victims, their families, and also the bad name she brought to the nursing profession. Yeah. And rather than going to prison, she was incarcerated to Rampton Secure Hospital, which I'm assuming is like a mental hospital, those yeah. prisons where they send the mentally insane, which is a high security facility housing many individuals detained under the Mental Health Act. As an inmate at Rampton, she began her attention seeking by ingesting ground glass.
Wow.
And pouring boiling water on her hands. She admitted to 3 murders, of which she was charged, as well as 6 assaults. The appalling nature of her crimes has placed her on a home list of criminals who will never be eligible for parole. So she is never getting out. And as of August 2006, she tried to review her sentence, but it was denied, and she remains in Rampton. She must still be alive. Let me Google her quickly. She must be alive. Beverly. That's crazy. I feel like she's mental. Like I always say, it's one thing to kill people, but it's another thing to kill babies.
Yeah.
I have people looking at me crazy, but I know what I just said is she's 55 years old. What? I did not expect her to look like this. She looks so normal.
What do you mean she looks so normal? You say that as if
look.
They're supposed. Yeah, but you say that.
Yeah, but I didn't expect her to look like that.
There's no specific look to.
I expect her to look more crazy.
Too much TV time.
She's 55 now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Still in prison. That's crazy, guys. I just don't understand. Like, you see this little baby lying there, and the baby's already sick. The baby's coughing, got pneumonia. And what do you do? Oh, no, let me help the baby. No, let me smother the baby. What's wrong with you? Like, it's like, what? The poor baby can't even. Like, what I meant is, if it's one thing to kill an old person, because they can defend themselves. But a little baby can't defend itself. It's little. It's like that 2-month-old. What's she going to do? She can't exactly self-defense.
Well, if she planned to kill an old person in the way she does her stuff, they wouldn't necessarily be able to.
Okay, that's also true. But still, the baby can't realize when something's wrong. If you go into the hospital for pneumonia and suddenly your heart is stopping, you can say to the other nurse, guys, something's wrong, but the baby doesn't know.
Yeah,
poor little babies. And now they all died for what? So you could be the hero and be someone's godmother, which they probably revoked, because I would have revoked it if you think I was keeping you as my child's godmother. Yeah. You crazy guys. These people are crazy. These serial killers. It's a lot. It's a lot. Well, that's it for the Angel of Death. Yeah. Any other things you'd like to add?
Nope. None in particular.
None in particular.
Yeah. The only thing that I don't understand is why they gave her like 13 life sentences.
Because she killed people.
No,
she
you don't get it. Me. You don't even let me finish my point. What I'm saying is, and we've discussed this on the show before, where a life sentence should mean a life sentence. Now, 13 life sentences is just kind of.
So, a life sentence is only like 15 years. So, if she gets 13 life sentences,
then they need to change it. They need to say, we give you 13 years.
What? No, it's 15 times 13.
Life sentence means.
She's got 195 years in prison.
Life sentence means you must die there.
She will! 195 years!
No, but one life sentence.
I get that. I also agree. I think it's dumb. If you say it's a life sentence, they should die in prison. It shouldn't mean 15 years. I get your point. Unfortunately, that's not how it works. But to get 13 life sentences means she's going to be in prison for 195 years. No one is living 195 years, so yeah. She will die in prison. Yeah.
This is why I think they should bring back electric chairs.
But who are you to say who dies?
No,
you're not God.
Don't need to kill them. Just shake them a bit.
So how much electricity are you passing through them just to shake them?
Just enough. I think 10 seconds is good.
Guys, I'm getting slightly concerned about the person sitting across the table.
Yeah. Well.
As for slightly shock them... What? No. That's like being like, I'll slightly hang you. I'll only let you hang there for 5 minutes instead of 5 hours.
Not necessarily.
No, it's exactly the same.
No.
It's the same.
Because how when you put someone in the electric chair, how long does it take for them to die?
Immediately.
No.
It is.
Immediately after yes. How long of being shocked?
Okay, let's see. I'll Google.
Either way, I'm saying 10 seconds won't hurt. It's just enough.
Who watch my Google search history must think, what the hell is... How long does it take to die in an electric chair? Huh? 2 minutes!
Exactly.
That's so cruel. They're going for 2 minutes. What? Do you know where they do that in the prison? All the lights flash because it's using all the electricity to kill the person. So you just want to zap them for 10 seconds. Why?
I said it just so they're scared enough, because people are not scared clearly to go to
jail. Yeah, that's what. Send them to Dubai. They'll cut their hands off. Then it's fine.
See, and then you blame me for wanting to shock them for 10 seconds. Cutting their hands off.
Yeah, then how's she going to kill someone if she doesn't have hands?
Yeah, but there's a lot more they can do.
But what's she going to do? She can't inject the baby if she's got no fingers to inject the baby.
Okay.
If she was electrocuted for 10 seconds, she can still go and kill the baby again.
I believe my method is very effective and less costly. Because all you're doing is that you're wasting
all that electricity. Can you imagine Africa?
You're keeping a person alive, but removing their ability to function.
So they mustn't function. They killed people. Let them suffer.
Then that's the equivalent of just, why don't they die?
Now they must also suffer when they have to do their own things. They must suffer. Can you imagine in South Africa we have the electric chair there? Eskom would hate us.
They wouldn't. They have enough power.
Where's the power? No, they must suffer. They killed people. Now they must suffer the rest of their life. Then they just have no hands. How are they going to eat? You see, now suffer. Pick up your spoon with no fingers. You must suffer as well. Not just a tiny little shock. You see, if you just have a little 10-second shock, what's that? That's like putting your hand on a stove.
Do you know how much voltage is in the electric chair?
For 10 seconds, it's fine. You'll burn your bum and you'll be fine.
They've used that to tame elephants.
Oh, poor elephants.
I know.
I still think they cut their hands off. You can't strangle anyone. You can't shoot anyone with no fingers. I think it's the perfect solution.
Okay.
Do not. Okay, you know what? It's fine. I feel like we must do a survey. We'll ask people. We'll have people vote. And we'll see who is more accurate. It's me, but we already know this, but I'll prove it. Anyway.
Careful there. You're starting to sound a bit...
Doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah. Well, we hope you enjoyed this show. Otherwise, have a good week. We will see you next time, same place. Goodbye.
Active FM. Radio has never been better.